And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I thank you for joining me today. I hope you're having a great day out there. Hey, we're going to talk about today how you can make even more money on your rental properties. We're going to talk about how to increase cash flow and as well how that increase in cash flow can actually increase your equity position. Maybe. It does depend. Right, I'll explain that a little later. And I also want you to understand, Lifestyles Unlimited, you're listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. This radio program has been on for a very long time. Lifestyles Unlimited has been around for a very long time, since 1990. So we've had a lot of time to refine our approach, the education, the mentoring, everything that we do for you. And I'll tell you, along the way, one thing hasn't changed. Del Walmsley, he founded Lifestyles Unlimited back in 1990. He has had three steadfast rules to investing, and those have remained the same. Rule number one, I'm going to give you those three rules, and we're going to focus on one of them in particular. Rule number one, never lose money. Makes sense, right? Makes sense. We explained that on other shows, not going to get into that today. Rule number two, you must have cash flow. If and I'm reading this right off the Lifestyles website, it says, if a deal does not produce cash flow, you don't want it. And our goal as educators and mentors is to help you create cash flow by implementing what we teach, and that's the focus today. Yeah, you're going to have cash flow. Let's make it even bigger. Now, what is rule number three? You can't get rich slow. Again, topic for another show. If you want to read those rules, go to lifestylesunlimited.com. There is more detail there. But the focus today is on cash flow. As we said there, the investment must have cash flow. And today's focus is how can we take a good amount of cash flow and make it even better? You know, we talk a lot about the ways we make money, how we make money in real estate. On our single-family houses, we make money five ways. On the apartments, six ways. And did you know that improving your cash flow, as I mentioned earlier, can actually improve your equity position in one of those two asset classes? Again, we're focused on single-family. That's one asset class within the residential rental real estate space. And multifamily or apartments is the other. And you can increase your cash flow essentially in two ways. You can increase income, what you are collecting from your customers, from your clients, from your residents. So you can increase income and you can reduce expenses. Of course, you can do both. But I'll tell you, at Lifestyles Unlimited, we tend to focus our conversations not on expenses, but on pushing up income. So why income and not reducing expenses? I want to get this out of the way. I want to give this to you as something to think about. Whether you're a single family investor, apartment investor, doesn't matter. We see this all the time. Mom and pop operators, they're afraid to raise rents. They don't want to lose those residents. They're afraid to charge other fees, and that's what we're going to talk about today. What are those other fees? What could they be charging that they're not? They're afraid to do these things because they'll lose their residence, and they're very focused on that occupancy. Occupancy, yes, is important, but you have to stick with the market. So what do they do instead, right, to drive up their income, their cash flow, let's say? They cut expenses, right? So they start to cut back on things like maintenance, right? Resident puts in a request, hey, garbage disposal is leaking under the sink here, and they ignore it. Because sending out the handyman, if it's a smaller apartment community, hiring somebody to get out there, maybe the fella or the lady do it themselves, right? Don't have the time, don't want to deal with it, so they leave it. Well, that leak causes bigger problems over the long run. Second story apartment, bam, issues pop up downstairs, right? Things like that drive the property over time into the ground, cutting back, not just on maintenance, but other expenses as well. And ultimately, for you and for me, especially for the Lifestyles Unlimited members, that does lead to a good buying opportunity for us. We love buying from the mom and pop investors out there. They're good operators, don't get me wrong, but a lot, especially the remote investors, just don't do it right. Ignore the income, cut the expenses, drive the property into the ground. When we go into a property, yes, if there are expenses that need to be addressed, absolutely we address them. Very commonly, for example, I was on a webinar just a night or so ago Syndicator, lead investor, is looking at an investment opportunity, was presenting this to us. It's all bills paid. And they discovered the water bill's really, really high. That points to leaky things, right? Leaky faucets in the kitchen, running toilets, those sort of things. It's very easy to go in and address that upfront, part of your CapEx, part of your business plan, part of the project, and drive those expenses down. So stuff like that, absolutely focus on that, but not cutting things like maintenance. But instead, of course, like I said, what we really focus on is income. So how do we increase income and thereby cash flow? Well, I already mentioned we've been around. Lifestyles Unlimited was founded by Del Walmsley back in 1990. And one of the things that has been refined over the years and added to as a document called Ways to Create Other Income. Now, I've got in front of me here, it's a little bit older version of this. It's 28 ways to create other income. That's actually been increased, right? The market changes. The environment changes. We get new things like AI, artificial intelligence. That's going to change the landscape, isn't it? Right? The internet changed the landscape a number of years ago, right? As these things come to the fore, that list will grow. Maybe some of these things drop off. I don't know, but it's only increased since I've been here. And the focus today, we're going to be interchanging between both single family and multifamily. Now, the list I have is primarily for multifamily investors, but a lot of the items on this list do apply if you are a single family investor, and I am a single family investor, and I've used a lot of these. I'm also a passive investor in apartments, so I like to see when I get on a webinar for a potential investment, I like to see that the syndicator, the lead investor, we call them, has some of these in mind, because we really want to push up the rents, and we'll talk about why that's important on the equity side of things later in the show. Easy one. Number one item on their list, number one item on my list: increase the gross potential rents. That's multifamily jargon. That's the street rent. It's the rent. It's what you charge to allow somebody to rent, to live in your unit number one in your apartment community or my house at 123 Main Street. And it's very important that you keep up with the market rents. And this is where mom and pops tend to get behind, again, because they're afraid. If I take up the rent, that person's going to move out. That's where we follow the motto at Lifestyles Unlimited: best product, best price. We put the best product out there. That alone is going to make people want to stick around. Right? When we buy a distressed house, we go in and we fix it up. Anything that's broken now or could break in the next handful of years, fix it now during the renovation phase. That pulls all your maintenance forward, so you don't have to worry about cutting that expense, right? You've already addressed it during the capital expense phase of the project. You don't have the maintenance calls. It's a done deal. That's the best product, the best price. I'm not necessarily getting up above the market rent. In fact, I like to slide in just a little bit below that. My residents are smart. They know. The people that apply at my properties, they're smart. They know what the market rents in their submarket are. If I'm way, way above that, forget it. I'm not going to have any traffic. If I'm way, way below it, they're going to be all over me. I'm probably going to get some people that I don't really want to have as residents, by the way. I want to be just under market. That's the best price. But as people stay with you for years and years, and that happens, you have to be sure to keep an eye on that market rent. You're giving away a ton of money if you're not staying with the market rent. How do you know what the market rent is? You run rental comps, right? You have access to software, ideally, that does that, that allows you to look at what's leased in the last handful of months ahead of a lease renewal, let's say, or you have a realtor that you work with. Talk with them. Hey, what can I get the comps, please? But you need to know what the market is, or talk with others in your network, right? I know who is investing in my submarkets. I know this because I've talked with people over time. Over years, I know who's in DeSoto. I know who is in Hearst, right? If I need to have that conversation. But that's a very easy one, very low-hanging fruit. Number one. Number two, here's another jargon term for you. Implement RUBS. RUBS, that's R-U-B-S. That stands for Ratio Utility Billing System. You know, boy, it's been a while now. I lived in an apartment community here in my town where I now own a house, and they used RUBS. And what it is they have a master metered water bill, meaning the apartment community gets the total water, this one single water bill for the entire community. Some get the same thing for gas. Some get the same thing for electricity. Do you have to eat that? No, you can charge that back. And there are different systems that may take the square footage of the apartment unit to determine what that share is for that particular resident. But the important thing here is that you're charging that back. You're recouping at least a portion of those utility bills. And by the way, it doesn't have to just be utilities. It can be extermination costs, right? It can be trash service. Maybe there are other things in there. Now, this one, thinking about the multifamily versus single family spectrum, this really only applies to multifamily, right? With a single family house, my resident is responsible for all utilities, right? They're responsible for water, sewer, right? Gas, if there's gas going to the house, electric, garbage, and pest. I make sure the place is pest-free before anybody moves in. And if they move in with a slew of kids that are making a mess, or they've got pets, and the roaches follow them in, that is now their responsibility. So there's no rubs. That's on them to deal with. Apartments are a different animal. If you have one resident in one unit that has that same issue, now it bleeds over to others. So you're, as the resident, as the lead investor, as the operator of those apartments, you're taking care of that. But you can build that back, and you should recuperate that cost. So rents and rubs, two big numbers that you can really move. That dial will really move if you start to address those early on. And that typically those are two of the big talking points that I see lead investors, apartment syndicators, focused on when they're taking on and advertising a new project. What else? I just mentioned pets. Yeah, pets. I've seen this a lot over the years, and it surprises me in the multifamily space. Either people don't allow pets at all, which, by the way, if that's your stance, and I know single-family investors that are of the same mind, you're missing out on a very large portion of the population. I think it's something like 70% of Americans have pets. It's a really big number. So if you say no pets, well, you're missing out on a very large percentage of the population. It's going to affect your rental, your rental speed, the speed with which you release a property after somebody moves out. And you're missing out on another income source. So with respect to pets, I've got a couple different items here. Number one, you should be charging pet fees. Now, in this document, it says pet fees and pet deposit. And this applies, by the way, to both multifamily and single-family rental property. Pet fees, pet deposits. What's the difference? And I see this a lot in the market. I'm in various online forums, you know, different groups. I see people asking questions, and I see the term a lot. Non-refundable pet deposit. This is, I'm kind of getting into the details here, but this is a misnomer. A deposit is inherently something that is refundable, can be, doesn't have to be. If that pet moves in and you collect, let's say, a $500 pet deposit, and the pet damages the property, you keep that, just like you would a security deposit. In fact, it gets married to the security deposit. So a deposit is inherently refundable, whereas a pet fee is a non-refundable fee. Language is important here, and I find it is important to advertise correctly so that you don't send mixed signals to the market, to those applicants, to those potential residents. Now, what do you charge? How much should that be? I've seen it's all over the place. I like to look at lease listings to see what people are charging. I like to have conversations with others to hear what they are charging. You know, at Lifestyles Unlimited, we have a mastermind group of lead investors that gets together once a month. This might be a topic for them. They may talk about this. Hey, what is the current market rate here in DFW? I sit in Dallas-Fort Worth for pet fees, right? Maybe it's $250, maybe it's $350, maybe it's $500, right? I have had conversations with applicants where maybe I'm a little flexible and can make that fee a deposit. You have that flexibility. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
The Lifestyles Unlimited team of real estate investing mentors and educators want to meet you. Learn to retire in 5 years or less. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb. Hey, if you have any questions today, send those over to me at askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. And we're just working through a number of ideas, a number of things you might think about if you own rental property, whether multifamily apartments or single family. And these are ideas, things that you can think about to drive up your income, to increase the amount of monies that you collect from your residents, which in turn increases your cash flow, right? Dell's rule number two has to cash flow. Well, we can push that cash flow up even higher through some of the things we're talking about today. We've hit a number already. We're talking about pets, though, as we headed into the break. And I mentioned something that you do have some flexibility. I don't know if apartments would do this, but as a single family investor, I've had occasions where applicants had multiple animals. And you may set a cap. You may say, hey, no more than two, no more than three, dogs only, cats only, whatever. That this is totally up to you. There are no limitations. This is not a protected class, right? You can discriminate against pets. But I can remember one concrete situation where we had a house and the gentleman had two boxers, two dogs. I think our pet fee at the time was $350, something like that. And so we're going to charge it. You do charge per animal. He's like, man, I don't want to pay $700 in non-refundable pet fees. This guy had a great resume, great pedigree. We knew he was going to be a good resident. In fact, he's been with us for a very, very long time. So we said, you know what? Okay, let's do half as a pet fee, half as a pet deposit. When you move out, you potentially get that back, right? Okay, that solved the problem. So differentiate, however, in your language. Is it a pet fee? Is it a pet deposit? Can I charge both? You can absolutely charge both. Do you charge it per animal? Yes, you should. What if they have 20 animals? Don't let them in. You know, occasionally you can be flexible. Oh, you have three animals. Okay. That's pet fees and pet deposits. Sticking with pets, item number four. Pets again, you should be charging pet rent. Yeah, you can charge a rent for that animal. The animal is going to, I don't care what you think about your personal pet, they do damage. I got a big dog. We adopted him a little over a year ago from a local shelter. Man, he's grown up much more massively than we thought. He's closing in on 90 pounds, and yeah, occasionally he just goes barreling through the house. He's hitting the windows, you know, they're getting that little foggy space in between there now. Other things as well, you know, so the point is there's damage, and you should account for that in pet rent. And this, again, thinking about multifamily versus a single family, this applies in both situations. How much should you charge? I don't know, $25 a month per pet? Absolutely, per animal. What about guinea pigs? Yeah, why not? What about rabbits? I would. You know, another story for you. Back in college, my now wife had a big lop-eared rabbit, Dexter. His name was Dexter. And she just let him hop around the apartment. She learned to put those little salsa packets from Taco Bell on the wires so he wouldn't chew those. Okay, looked good. You know, pooped here and there, that sort of thing. When she moved out and we moved that bed out, that guy had basically taken up residence under the bed. He had eaten the carpet. He had eaten the pad under the carpet. There was just slab exposed. So, do rabbits do damage? Absolutely they do. What about fish tanks? I might think twice about that. Water is the enemy in this space. Do you charge per fish? I don't know. Whole other conversation. But thinking back, you know, usually we're talking dogs or cats. Absolutely charge per animal. Is it 25? I don't know. Go out and see what other people are charging. Have that conversation with your network. Right? That's why it's important to have a network around you. When I go out to the Lifestyles Unlimited case study, I check this from time to time. Hey, you know, I've been kind of operating at this level for a while. What are you now charging on your houses for dogs? What's your weight limit? Some people have weight limits, by the way. Certainly a count, head count. Don't want more than two, don't want more than three, something like that. But charge pet rent. You're missing out on a lot of income that way if you're not. So we've talked rents, we've talked rubs, we've talked pets. Let's talk security deposits. I mentioned a minute ago, if you do charge a pet deposit, at least in the Texas Association of Realtors lease, if you use the pet agreement, it used to be called a pet addendum, it's now called a pet agreement, or animal agreement, actually. It says that if you collect a pet deposit, that is added to and becomes part of the security deposit. And this is a place where you can also create income. Simply by enforcing your lease, and you would be surprised at how many people get very, very lax in this space. And I know this because I see, again, going back to the various online social media forums and whatnot that I'm in, I see these questions. By the way, this applies both to multifamily and single family. If they've done damages, you need to collect and retain, rather, the security deposit. And what I like to do, I like to maintain a list of possible charges for damages and for cleaning. My list, just like this multifamily list I'm telling you about, that has grown over the years as through experience I say, I didn't know somebody could break that thing. It gets on the list because now I know what the cost is to fix that. Can you add a little bit of a markup? You probably should, right? There's overhead. There's time associated with organizing these things. But ultimately, if there are damages, it is your responsibility to provide that resident with an itemized list of the charges. If you send a contractor out, retain that invoice, right? And at least here in Texas, I can't speak to the other states and in the union out there, we have people operating rental property, but at least here in Texas, you have 30 days maximum to account for the security deposit. That means to send out that list of itemized charges. Maybe you don't charge them anything at all. Send out the $0 statement. If you don't send that out within the 30-day time window, you are now liable for three times the amount of that security deposit in penalty. So if I had, let's just say I had a $1,500 security deposit, damages accounted to about, let's say, $500. I kept that $500, returned the $1,000. When I return the $1,000, I'm going to put that security statement in there with the check. If I don't do that, I'm on the hook for damages, $1,500 times three, $4,500. I don't know how many residents know that. Don't tell them, I guess. But yeah, that's the state code. 30 days. Stick to that. So security deposits, it is an income source. Now, of course, you are offsetting expenses with that. So it may be net zero. Maybe there's a little bit of a profit margin in there due to your time, your overhead, etc. Moving on, number six here, rent laundry equipment. Now, if you're thinking apartments, yeah, this absolutely applies to apartments. And really, it generally only applies to apartments. And you may think of the apartment community you last lived in. Maybe you live in one now, and they've got a laundry room, right? That's great. That's a place to collect income as well. But here what we're talking about is having a space within that individual unit with washer and dryer connections. And some apartments have those already. And some apartment operators just leave those there and they let the residents bring their equipment in. But other savvy investors, what they do is they get a good contact, good connection in the appliance industry, and they start to source those washers and dryers, and they charge a monthly rental fee. This pushes up income. People love this. They don't have to deal with bringing the stuff in. They don't have to deal with setting it up. You do all of that for them. Do you charge a connection fee? Maybe, right? Added income. And I've even had leads where I've been a passive investor in their apartment syndication. I've seen them go in and actively add space for laundry, add the units, and then rent them. This is a great thing. Now, you could possibly do this in single family, I suppose. I've known a few investors here and there when they bought a house, it had the washer and dryer was there. They're like, what do I do with it? I was like, I don't know, sell it. They decided to keep it. I don't know if they charged rent. Maybe they should have. Because ultimately what happens, those things break down. Now do you write into your lease? You should write into your lease. When it breaks, I'm not replacing it. That's okay to put that in your lease. But generally, we just don't provide those. No washer, dryer, no fridge, at least here in Texas. Other states, I know in Tennessee, a fridge is typically provided, right? So the market will vary depending on where you are active with your business. Let's talk about the next one, number seven. Very, very important. In fact, this triggered the show. I got an email from a resident on the first of the month saying, hey, we had something go on. We're going to pay late. And we'll, of course, pay the late fees. This particular gentleman, very good at communication, so we'll, you know, not a problem. But late fees, major source of income, can be. And this does apply to both apartments and single family. And here it just simply comes down to you enforcing your lease and collecting those. No sob stories, the car, whatever it was, I don't care. It's in the lease. Abide by the lease. Follow the lease. Enforce the lease, period. But do watch your state rules around this. In Texas, a number of years ago, they implemented, the state legislator pushed out some rules around late fees. And there is, in essence, a cap. They didn't expressly say what that number is, but they said they don't want anything egregious. So it was generally agreed that what's called safe harbor in terms of late fees amounts to, well, let's say 12% is the number if it's a single family property. So if my rent is $1,000 a month, if I collect no more than $120, that's 12%. I'm in that safe zone, right? I'm not getting into that excessive late fee charge arena. For apartments, that number is 10%. So if your rent is $1,000, don't collect more than $100. How you structure that, it varies. Some people will do a flat amount on day one. Now, not day one, right? Due on the first. In Texas, we have to have a grace period of a couple days, so it's considered late on the fourth. Is that $50? And then some number per day thereafter. Do I just collect the whole 12% at once? right? That's up to you to structure it. I like a little bit of a heavier hit at the start and then a per diem amount after a while, but just be sure to cut that off after 12% if it's a single family house. And stay in tune with your eviction rules. Well, maybe I need to go ahead and get that 3-day notice out, the whatever it is now, whatever your market provides for. We'll talk about that on another show. We had a new state law come down the pike here in Texas in this vein. But watch those limits. But be sure to collect them. What else can you collect? Number 8, holdover fees. And I've only had to do this once in my entire dozen plus years operating single family houses. A holdover fee, and this applies both to apartments and single family. It's simply my lease ends on day X. You need to be out by day X. If you stay day X plus 1, that's a holdover. You've now stayed one day too long. And that can be a problem. In my one concrete example, I was very tight with my leasing. Started leasing before the people moved out, and the new folks were moving in 2 days later. I had exactly one day to get my contractor in there to do the make ready, and these people stayed an extra day. So you can see where that causes a problem. We got it done. But when there is a holdover, you can charge for that. And here in Texas, the allowable charge for a holdover is 3 times the rent. Now, I'm not charging 3 times the monthly rent for that one day. I figure out what the daily rate is and multiply by 3. In this case, we just took it out of that reduced their security deposit refund. Right, so holdover fees, absolutely, absolutely collect those. Valet trash service, do I do that at my houses? No. But when I was a resident at an apartment community down the road here a number of years ago, they had that. I didn't do it. I'm taking my trash out myself. But some people will put those bags out in front of the door, and a porter will pick those up and take them to the trash bins. This is usually on bigger apartment communities. If you have a 20 unit, you probably don't have a porter. It's probably you. Not the best idea, but you can charge for that. And this apartment community did. It was like 10 bucks. It wasn't big, but 10 bucks a month, something like that. What about cars? Everybody has cars here in Texas, man. Big state. You got to drive to get to where you're going from most people. Yeah, cars can drive revenue. Number one, or it was the number 10 on the overall list, reserved parking fees. In fact, I was watching, again, another webinar, potential syndication that I might look at, and the community has reserved parking already, but has room to take on more. And basically what that says is, let's say you've got a, 100-unit apartment community and 200 parking spaces and no reserve parking. Well, you can go isolate those spaces that are by people's doors. Say, this is now reserved, and you can pay $25, $35, $45, whatever the market rate is, to get to rent that space right by your door. Do people like to pay for that? Absolutely they do, because they don't like taking groceries in the rain or in 110-degree temperatures. So reserve parking fees applies to multifamily only, obviously. Covered parking fees. That community where I lived had covered parking. We have hail galore in Texas. I absolutely paid for that. That's even more, because it's by definition both reserved and covered, right? But you can really take it. In fact, again, thinking about the leads I've spoken with, sometimes there is no covered parking. And they'll look at, they'll do the analysis. Does the city permit me to put up those carports? What's the cost? And what's the added impact? How does that impact my cash flow? What can I charge? Does it make sense? This is part of their business plan. So you can add those fees as well. Maybe you have garages. We're invested in a community up out of state. In Indiana, they have garages. Do you think they charge extra for somebody to rent those garages? Of course they do. Of course they do. So if you have that, charge it. Again, cars, extra vehicle parking. In my leases, I typically write in the number of allowable vehicles that equates to the number of driving adults, right, in the household. What if they have a boat? What if they have, I've got an RV. What if they're parking an RV on your community? You know, by the dog park where I take my dog, there's an apartment complex across the way. I'm always staring at the RVs that are parked back there. There are 3 of them, travel trailers. I bet they're paying extra. So yeah, charge extra for those vehicles. They're taking up space, right? Maybe they're an eyesore. Maybe, I would say this applies to multi, but maybe you could do this in single family as well. And last item here on my list, number 14, if you've got storage rentals, I know some investors that have bought apartments where there are also storage units on site, charge for those obviously as well. Really, this only applies to multifamily. This is just some of the items on my list that I have in front of me of 28 items. Some of these other items on here, just purely apartment discussion points. Some of what we talked about, you can apply to your single family properties. And let's talk about the impact on value and the equity you have in these properties when you implement these sort of ancillary fees, these sort of added income items. Start with your houses. What is the impact of this extra income on your single-family rental house? Nothing, aside from added cash flow. Do these things. Get that added income for your bottom line, of course. That added cash flow, you want to have that. But it has no impact on the value. What is the impact of this extra income on your multifamily property? Well, same thing, you get the extra cash flow, but you do get added value. Why is there a differential there? If you don't know, the single family and multifamily are, simply put, they're valued differently. My houses are valued based on what other houses in my neighborhood have sold for. Doesn't matter if it's a rental, owner-occupant, doesn't matter. They don't know if I'm charging pet fees. I don't know if they're charging pet fees. I know what it sold for, and that's the value. That's how we get to the value on our houses, based on sold comps. Whereas apartments are valued on net operating income. This is operating income, all the revenues that you've collected, minus operating expenses. That's called NOI, or net operating income. You can have other expenses below that line. For example, if you pay all cash for an apartment, you don't have any debt service. Whereas if I finance my apartments, I have debt service. That is below that. That's financial expenses. It's below that net operating income line. Apartments are valued based on that NOI. And we can drive that NOI up through all the things that we've talked about today and many more. Again, that list I have here is double, twice as long as what I've told you. A lot of things, a lot of levers you can pull. Why is that important? Let's go back to parking. Parking is an easy one, and I love this one. Reserve parking. Let's say you charge for one spot $25 per month for that resident to get to park in front of their building, in front of their door. They love it. Well, that's $300 per year. Okay, how does that add to the value? The way that apartments are valued, and I'm not going to get into detail here, you're going to have to run with me, it's based on something called a cap rate, which is a percentage. Basically, that cap rate says what I want to earn on my apartment in terms of returns if I paid all cash, right? With leverage, it's a totally different conversation, but we use cap rates to determine value. So 6%, let's say 6% common metric here in DFW, if I'm able to create an extra $300 per year, if I use a cap rate of 6%, I divide that 300 by 0.06. That means a value add to my community of $5,000, right? That's a factor of 16, right? Divide 5K by 300. If the cap rate's 5%, the factor is 20, right? That gives you quick math. But let's say I don't just add one reserved spot. Let's say I have a 100-unit or 200-unit community. I add 50 reserved spots at 6%, right? What's 50 times 300? That's 15K. Divide that by 0.06. Now I've added $250,000 in value. If I want to add $1 million in value, what do I need to do? I just create $60,000 in additional annual income at a 6% cap rate. You know what that amounts to? Just $50 per unit per month on a 100-unit community. And you can get there typically just catching up on the rent. But as we discussed, there are a ton of other options, and we only hit maybe half of those. If you want to learn more, go to lifestylesunlimited.com, click on the free workshop to get started, and start pushing up that income, man. Lots of opportunity. You have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at LifestylesUnlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.